for a sunshine tree. For fresh taste and orange juice naturally. Orange juice with natural vitamin C from the Florida sunshine tree. Hi, I'm Nita Bryant.
If homosexuals are allowed their civil rights, then so would prostitutes or thieves or anyone else.
Orange juice with natural vitamin C from the Florida sunshine tree. Remember, breakfast without orange juice is like a day without sunshine.
Of course, Anita Bryant's diatribe against homosexuals was not part of her original orange juice commercial. This is J.D. Doyle, and this will be a very different edition of Queer Music Heritage. I'm calling it Songs About Anita Bryant. No, not songs by, but songs about her, as her actions in the late 1970s prompted an amazing amount of musical commentary, so much that this is a two-hour presentation. I'll give you a compact version of her history in a moment, but first want to give you two examples of songs she inspired. And they both happen to be by straight artists, as it wasn't only gay people who felt that they just had to speak out about her in song. First is folk singer Tom Paxton and Anita O.J. from 1977, and then you'll hear the Four Swallows singing, "Lord Knows I Don't Need Anita."
Jesus loves Anita, or so it doth appear. Lately things are looking strange, or dare I say it, queer. In spite of controversy, so the morning paper said, she's retained her high commission to squeeze fruits for heavy bread. You squeeze mine, Anita. I squeeze yours, Anita. You've been chosen, Anita. Yours are frozen, Anita. Terrible cost, Anita. Covered in frost, Anita. Smile and pray, Anita, you'll feel gay. You spoke in Miami to set the record straight. Gave the folks a target acceptable to hate. Told us there are some things that one never does in bed. One wonders, dear Anita, if you'll ever get ahead. You squeeze mine, Anita. Yours, Anita. You've been chosen, Anita. Yours are frozen, Anita. Terrible cost, Anita. Covered in frost, Anita. Smile and pray, Anita. You'll feel gay. Anita prayed for guidance, and guidance came to her. It said, Anita, keep the job at $100,000 per. If you don't believe in fairies, then they won't believe in you. With an orange clutched in either hand, you know what you can do. You squeeze mine, Anita. I squeeze yours, Anita. You've been chosen, Anita. Yours are frozen, Anita. Terrible cost, Anita. Covered in frost, Anita. Smile and pray, Anita.
Who's been running out the mouth? She's put the squeeze on freedom in the northeast, west, and south. Well, she's put a hex on kinky sex and whips and chains and boots. And she don't like homosexuals, but she loves those citrus fruits. Keep me from living the way I am.
the other cheek, 'cause Anita lesbian friend, her logic has to backfire for what we want in.
Oh, sometimes I think I need a woman,
and sometimes I think I need a man.
Oh, Lord knows I don't need Anita
to keep me from living the way I am. Well, God save us from this beauty queen and her crusade and jaws. Keep closet doors closed tightly seems to be her favorite cause. The smiling sunshine idol has really missed the point, so you'd better swear off orange juice before you blow this joint. Sometimes I think I need a man.
Oh, Lord knows I don't need a leader
to keep me from living the way I am.
Oh, sometimes I think I need a woman.
Yeah, and sometimes I think I need a man.
The Four Swallows 45 was from 1977, the year our story begins. In January of 1977, Dade County, Florida, that's the county that includes Miami, passed an ordinance that prohibited discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. That set off a firestorm and led to the founding of the organization Save Our Children, with Anita Bryant as leader. They very quickly got enough signatures to call for a referendum to overturn the ordinance, with the vote scheduled for June 7th. By the time the election was set, it only left about 2 months for the gay community to mount its own campaign. The short time period was just one of the huge obstacles, as they were no match for the highly motivated Christian fundamentalists who trotted out all the now very tired tirades that homosexuality is immoral and homosexuals want to recruit children. The ordinance was overturned by a 2-to-1 margin. In Miami, at the center of the gay efforts was activist Bob Kunst. He founded the Miami Victory Campaign, and their efforts continued way past the election, as Anita and her Bible bigots were active in other cities. I asked Bob to sum up the impact of Anita Bryant and her Save Our Children campaign.
Well, it wasn't just Anita Bryant. There was Dr. Alan Rockley and myself that started it all. Alan was a co-author with myself of the world-famous Human Rights Ordinance and used her to open this door and take a local issue and turn it into a worldwide event. We had a great revolution here, and we talked openly about human sexuality and supporting everybody's consenting adult amendment rights. And the result of our campaign was millions of people coming out of the closet, taking on everybody from Jimmy Carter, who supported Anita Bryant, to state legislatures. And we just had a whole international scene that emerged out of here, took on everybody. And the victory was just the fact that we were fighting back. We weren't going to be misrepresented. And we told the world, this is who we are. Get over it. And in each case, we had to deal with all the craziness from the right-wing fanatics that, were all screaming, save our children, and we kept on answering, we are your children. What is your problem? And Anita Bryant is not here. We threw her behind out, and we had the number one boycott in the world, which was orange juice. And we went after every one of her products and everything she was endorsing. You want to play this dirty little game? You want to talk about equating our lovemaking with animals and dead people and all this other stuff that was her god-awful stuff, and we picked up on it and used it and threw it right back in her face. It was little old Miami-Dade County in the Deep South that took on and made this gay issue a household word, and everybody had to deal with it as a result of our effort. I think we've done probably about 38,000 news interviews since. So in 35 years, we've had a pretty good track record.
I want to ask, would you please tell me about the 45 released by the Miami Victory Campaign?
Yes. Well, Lynn Frizzell wrote the song, gave it to us. We played it on the air here. It was terrific. I think Lynn has passed away from AIDS also. He was a brilliant guy and just a wonderful person. He's one of the many forces out there that touched base with exactly what we were up to and fell in love with our campaign, wrote a great song, and we put it out to as many people as possible. And the public was very generous. They were very supportive because it was a good statement. It was an important statement.
Again, the song was by Lynn Frizzell and was called Hurricane Anita. Now, there really was a Hurricane Anita in late August of that year, and Frizzell was quoted as saying he wrote the song in honor of that year's biggest bag of hot air.
Thanks to the citrus queen, I'd rather eat a tangerine. She's the one preaching hate. Welcome to the Sunshine State. Hurricane Anita, the season's first bad storm. Hurricane Anita, destruction is not norm. Thanks to the citrus queen, Leviticus 20:13. I will not go to hell. Well, Hurricane Anita, the season's first bad storm. Hurricane Anita, destruction is not norm. Hurricane Anita, Miami's back of wind. Hurricane Anita, she's at the bitter end.
Of course, there were women also singing about Anita, and her campaign definitely caught the attention of the women at Olivia Records. In 1977, they released their seventh album called Lesbian Concentrate. On the cover was a graphic of that title on a frozen orange juice can, a direct nod towards Anita. The song speaking loudest to her was written by Mary Watkins and sung by Linda Tillery. It was called Don't Pray for Me.
Life's passing you by while rules enslave you. And it's your blind innocence that traps you, that that makes you think it's so wrong I do. Yeah. Well, don't you know that you're a victim? A sweet Christian lady for reaching hate.
Thank you.
And here's another song by a women's music pioneer, Cassie Culver. Her song was very lyrically to the point and was called "What Are We Going to Do About Anita?"
Love somebody, no matter who. Love somebody, no matter who. No matter who. If it's a horse or a canary, if it's a dyke, if it's a fairy, if it's alive and needs your caring, love somebody, no matter who. Even someone straight will do. Well, the sin of sins is pride and an empty heart inside, and self-righteousness will take you where old Satan dare not go, down below. Jesus said, love one another, every sister and brother. Don't go posing in your steeple, throwing stones at other people. Take a moment out and try to note the mote in your own eye. Miss Anita, get behind us. We don't need the citrus gang to guide us in the way we should go. 'Cause we do love one another as the good Lord bade us do. Though it gets a little arduous loving you. Love somebody, no matter who. Love somebody, no matter who. No matter who. If it's the same sex or complimenting, if it's an adult who's consenting, if it's alive and needs your caring, love somebody, no matter who. Even someone straight will do. Sing it with me. Love somebody, no matter who. Love somebody, no matter who. No matter who. If it's the same sex, if it's the same sex, or complimenting, or complimenting. If it's an adult who's consenting, if it's alive and needs your caring, love somebody, no matter who. Even someone straight will do.
And that was a live recording of Love Somebody, written in 1977 by Malvina Reynolds and sung by Jenny Clemons. It's from the 1980 compilation album Gay and Straight Together. You've heard a lot of mention about orange juice in these songs. Anita Bryant was spokesperson for the Florida Citrus Commission, and her TV commercials for them were everywhere. So it was natural for the gay community to call for a boycott of Florida oranges. It was ultimately successful, as her contract with them was dropped in 1979 due to the controversy and negative publicity. One song directly rallied for the boycott, and it was by poet and singer Rod McEwen, and he did more than just sing about it. He took time out from his career to actively campaign in Florida, and he took out full-page ads in the entertainment publication Variety. The song he recorded was appropriately called Don't Drink the Orange Juice.
I go to Florida a lot because the weather's always hot. There's pretty girls and pretty boys, as many Jews as there are goys, as many blacks as there are whites, as many days as there are nights, as many straights as there are gays. Yes, they have fun in lots of ways. Ah, oh, but don't drink the orange juice,
I beg you please.
Don't drink the orange juice,
I beg you please.
Don't drink the orange juice,
I beg you please.
Might lead to all kinds of bigotry. Miami Beach is pretty sand, nice with lovely Samarkand. The Cuban music is the top at all the discotheques and hops. There's Hetty sailing in the Keys, and all the sharks are out to sea. Yes, Florida's the place to be, but won't you take a tip from me? Oh,
don't drink the orange juice,
don't drink the orange juice, don't drink the orange juice. Might lead to lots of kinds of bigotry. Don't drink the orange juice, I beg you please. Don't drink the orange juice, I beg you please.
Don't drink the orange juice,
I beg you please. Might lead to any type of insanity. I go to Florida a lot, because the weather's always hot. There's pretty girls and pretty boys, many Jews as there are ghosts, as many blacks as there are whites, as many days as there are nights, as many straights as there are gays. Yes, they have fun in lots of ways. Ah, but
don't drink the orange juice. Don't drink the orange juice. Don't drink the orange juice.
Might lead to all kinds of insanity.
Within the next year after the Dade County decision, the same tactics were used to defeat or overturn gay rights laws in a number of cities, like St. Paul, Wichita, and Eugene. And gay folks found themselves rising to the occasion in the form of protests. These protests also followed Anita Bryant as she toured the country doing her own performances. Now, this is a gay and lesbian music history show, but I want to work in some voices who knew this part of our history firsthand. The election was on June 7th, and the very next night, Bryant was set to perform at Scope Auditorium in Norfolk, Virginia. They were ready for her. On the morning of her visit, the Norfolk Coalition for Human Rights, formed just 10 days before, held a prayer breakfast for 75 people with the theme, Save Our Country from Anita. They organized a protest rally and even had people inside the auditorium who had walked in along with the crowd not being noticed. About 40 minutes into her performance, as soon as she started railing against homosexuality, our inside agitators stood up and started yelling. Bryant broke into tears. It happens that I lived in Norfolk from 1978 until 1981, and though I missed all the Anita excitement, I was active in the gay organizations there. So I still know some of the folks who were involved. I was able to interview one of the main organizers of the Norfolk protest, Steve Stone, and I started by asking him how the Norfolk gay community got organized for Anita Bryant's visit.
It was difficult, actually, because it was something new to all of us. None of us had done anything like this before. And so we went out to the community, out to the bars, that sort of thing, trying to encourage people to get involved because we knew Anita was going to be coming to Norfolk for a concert, and it was going to be the day after the Dade County vote. So we wanted to have a presence out there for that, not knowing how the vote was going to go. And we appealed to some of the national organizations for help, and they were more focused on other things with Anita and national things, and they were supportive, but they weren't being too helpful. We had hoped somebody would come down and help us organize that sort of thing, and we didn't get it. And the funny thing was the vote came, and we lost, and all of a sudden the phones in our office started ringing with all the national groups calling us, saying, are you ready for tomorrow? You need to have a presence out there. You've got to do something because, that's our first appearance. So we were a little bit frustrated that all of a sudden they wanted us to do stuff but hadn't been able to help us out too much beforehand. And we really didn't know how things were going to go the next day. We had gotten permits with the police and made all the arrangements for our protests and made sure everything was on the up and up and contacted all the media and everything. And then that afternoon of the protest, I got a phone call from somebody at the airport, Norfolk International Airport, and it was the private terminal there. And they were asking me how many more aircraft to expect for our event. And I was totally befuddled. I'm going, what do you mean aircraft? Oh, well, we've got, news planes coming in and things like that. And, all of a sudden we realized we really are in the eye of the storm now. Because national media started showing up to cover what was going on, and we didn't know what was going to go on. And so finally the time for the protest to organize came, and I had already sent some of our folks out onto the street to meet people at a couple of organizing locations. And the last of us left the office to go out there and meet them with no idea at this point, how many people were there, because, of course, this is before cell phones and everything.
Let's back up a second, Steve, and talk about the organization that was formed in anticipation.
It was a coalition of groups in the area the ACLU, various gay groups that existed, the student groups, that sort of thing.
And it was called?
Norfolk Coalition for Human Rights. It was very small initially. It was probably 15 people at most. Again, as I said, we didn't know, those of us that left the office last had no idea if anybody was going to come out, if they were going to be feeling defeated because of what had happened in Dade County. And we came around the corner, and I was shocked. There were 600 people organized, ready to march. It was just an amazing turnout. And the police, to their credit, were fantastic. One of the officer came up to me that was in charge and said, you know, you've got a lot more people here than we planned on, but, you know, we're going to make sure this works. We're going to clear the streets for you. Just so you know, there's a counter demonstration that's already out there that has not gotten a permit or anything. We'll make sure that everybody stays separated. And, you know, we'd like to break you into two groups because there's so many of you, which is not something we had ever anticipated. And we marched down Granby Street and got the scope, and everybody went to their protest areas and demonstrated for a long time. And we also had made arrangements for a handful of our folks to get into the hall, probably like 20 or 30. And at one point during Anita's presentation, they stood up and did a verbal protest. Of course, they were escorted out, but we made sure our message was inside the hall as well as outside.
So did they chant or what?
It was, you know, basically holding up some signs that had been hidden and, you know, equal rights, you know, down with Anita, that sort of thing.
So they marched out of the hall. Was there a rally or something afterwards?
No, we just had the protests on the street, and then everybody marched back to the assembly point, and we broke up from there.
How did the Norfolk gay community use this protest to build on an organization?
I think it strengthened everything in sort of an indirect way, because it was the first time there'd ever been anything like this. We had never had a gay pride parade or anything like that in Hampton Roads. So I think the energy from that strengthened a lot of organizations, because people decided, you know, hey, I need to get involved in the community. I still remember the thrill of coming around that corner, halfway expecting to see some police cars and maybe a half dozen people, and seeing that crowd of people down there and just being so incredibly proud.
The first of many demonstrations had happened. A week later, she was performing in Houston, and one of the organizers was Ray Hill. And hardly anything involving gay rights in Houston has happened in over 40 years without Ray being involved in some way. I was curious about what it was like and how it all got organized so quickly, and got this short interview.
The Dade County Ordinance was defeated on June 7th, and Anita Bryant was already scheduled to perform in Houston on June 16th. About how long before that election did the Houston folks start organizing the protest?
We had almost a month. A columnist with the Houston Post, Jane Ely, in her column wrote a column titled, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? And she made that simultaneous with the booking of Anita announcement by the Texas Bar Association.
And so what was the organizing like? What was planned?
Well, as soon as Jane Ely's column came out, I called her, and because I know most journalists well, and I said, you know, is this real? And she said, it's a done deal. And so then I notified the then president of Houston Gay Political Caucus, which is now Houston Gay Lesbian Transgendered Political Caucus, Gary Van Ottingham, and said, Gary, we need to organize around this. And he said, oh, it's hopeless. And I said, no, it's not hopeless. We've got plenty of time. We've got more than 3 weeks here. And so we had a meeting in his living room, and everybody showed up, which was my first hint that there was enough anger for us to come up with enough energy to make this happen.
And you brought in some folks from out of town, too.
We immediately set up a board, and that board decided that what they wanted to do is bring some people in town. And I don't think we paid for anybody to come in town. We got Liz from the All in the Family show. We got David Goodstein. Both of them paid their own ticket. We got Jenny Apuzzo.
And Troy Perry.
Troy Perry, of course, was glad to come. Troy and I had known each other since 68, and we have this deal. If I run up a flag, he rallies at the base of it. If he runs up a flag, I rally at the base of his.
Can you tell me what it was like at the Houston protests?
I did. How many definitions can we come up with the two words life-changing? In the first place, we really were accurate when told the police chief we were expecting about 500 people, which he thought was more than we could produce. And then people came, and then they came, and then they came. I walked to the scene an hour early, and there were already 200 people in the parking lot of the Depository 2 where we coordinated. And that crowd quickly became too large for that parking lot.
And was it a rally, a march? What was it?
Well, we had speeches up front, and then we had speeches at the other end. The enthusiasm did not need to be generated. People had made a commitment. Of course, I suspect what caused the crowd to grow so large is people driving by to see if anybody showed up to do it. And whenever they saw the crowd was large enough, they realized safety in numbers. You're talking about a very closeted era. And the only thing that made people feel safe enough to join us was the sheer size of the demonstration. And that's what caused it to grow rapidly and exponentially.
How long was the march? And I understand you didn't take the streets, you were given the streets?
Well, we were told that there were no parade permits for downtown Houston at all, except for the rodeo parade. And certainly none for night. There was an absolute ban on nighttime interrupting of traffic in Houston. So we were told by the police, and we agreed to follow their dictates, that we would use the sidewalks on either side of the street, which gave rise to me saying, well, if we actually get 500 people, it would be easier and more efficient if we had sidewalks on two streets. So originally we had the sidewalks on either side of Smith Street, and I asked for the sidewalks on either side of Louisiana. It became obvious from the crowd gathering ahead of the march that we needed that. So everybody started off on four sidewalks, headed from McGowan Street to the downtown area. And that was moving at snail's pace. I mean, how many people can you put abreast on the sidewalk? And so Pappy Bond, who was the captain of special ops, called the officer standing next to me, because I was in charge of security and coordinating with the police. And the officer gave me his walkie-talkie, and I talked to Captain Bond. He said, take the goddamn streets. And I said, well, which one? Both of them. Because he was getting kind of an emotional thing. Nobody had ever seen that size of demonstration in Houston. And so the officer said, well, I'll radio the other officers and tell them to take the streets. And I said, they're not going to listen to your officers. They're going to listen to my marshals. And so I sent my marshals scampering up there. And they hadn't gone but about three blocks north of McGowan whenever the runners come up and said, we have the streets, move into it. And that created a cheer that kind of waved back to where we were. And according to Gary Van Ottingham's count, 12,000 showed up.
Wow.
And it didn't make any difference how many it was. It was significantly more people than had ever showed up for a Houston demonstration of any kind ever. And it was a very dramatic evening.
This may seem like maybe too perfect hindsight, but do you think the gay leaders in different cities already realized the impact that the protests would have on the gay movement and kind of welcomed it and hoped Anita would come to their cities?
Oh, well, I called everybody. I mean, the next morning, one of the things is that in Houston, we had a gay bash victim that was in the hospital hanging on by a thread at the time. And so I carried Jenny Apuzzo with me to the Bentob Hospital to visit him. And she and I both carried signs with his name on it because he would have wanted to be there. And so the next morning I had to go to the hospital and check on him. But as soon as I got back from the hospital, started calling. The first person I called was Harvey Milk. When you saw Milk, the movie, all right?
Yeah, there was that line about Wichita.
We've got to get Anita to come here. Well, that line was actually a product of the conversations that I was having with Harvey Milk, saying, you can't believe what happened in Houston when Anita came.
What is your kind of summation of the impact of Anita Bryan and her movement?
I don't think that Anise Parker would be mayor of Houston now if Anita Bryant had not visited the city in 77. I know that's an enormous leap, but I think that with Anita coming to town and giving us a clear target to organize in opposition to, had an enormous effect on our ability to put together a robust movement that accomplished its goals.
I know you're working on a play called Whatever Happened to Anita Bryant, and kind of very quickly, what is the play about and why are you writing it?
Well, I started out trying to find out what was magic about Anita, because she definitely had some magic on the GOBT movement. I knew it, and I became a real evangelist about getting Anita Bryant to come to your city and duplicating the Houston experience from her visit. And I thought that would work anywhere. I've read a bunch of stuff about Anita Bryant, and she's becomes kind of the whipping boy. And I, for one, know how valuable her opposition was to our progress. And so I thought that I would shed a light on that. But as I have researched Anita, I have discovered a pretty sympathetic character. Anita was pretty but not very bright. She was easily manipulated and extremely religious, and she believed that her birth was a miracle, and that made her subject to a bunch of mythology that the rest of us just don't have to deal with. So my play is relatively sympathetic to Anita. She's now an old woman, and she lives in Oklahoma.
And the play starts out fact, but then leaps into fiction.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm going to kill both she and I off in the play, so I needed to get to some fiction. And I think I found a colorful angle. Gus Van Sant, if you're listening, give me a call. Let's talk about it.
I guess I didn't find it surprising when I was researching this show that there have been several plays about Anita. In 1977, Doric Wilson, in his play West Street Gang, had a character named Benita Iant. In 2008, Elizabeth Whitney channeled Bryant in a one-woman show called A Day Without Sunshine. In 2009, there were two plays and a musical. Anita Bryant Died for Your Sins, one called 1,000 Homosexuals, and the musical Pie Face, The Adventures of Anita Bryant. That title refers to the incident in 1977 in Des Moines, Iowa, where at a press conference, gay rights activist Tom Higgins threw a pie in her face. The film and photos, as they would say now, went viral, and you cannot Google Anita without seeing them. There was another musical that Anita inspired, and it was written and produced amazingly quickly. It premiered on August 8, 1977, in L.A., and was called Joseph McCarthy is Alive and Living in Dade County. From it, I chose the track perhaps most lyrically to the point of this show, called The Children.
In the spring of 1977, a young man was stabbed to death on the streets of downtown San Francisco by a group of four youths yelling, "Faggot!" Coming on the heels of the anti-gay sentiment in this country, fanned by groups like the Save Our Children organization, it seems little consolation to his family and friends that people like Anita Bryant were offering him eternal life. To those people and all like them, we say thanks, but no thanks. We'll just try and keep the one we have.
The children, whose are these children? Children with laughing eyes, so strangely wise,
for innocent years, hiding from sorrow, awaiting tomorrow, when no one can say whose children are they. The children, these are our children. Keep them forever strong and ever long, that love may abide.
I have one more short interview piece I want to share with you in this segment. In 2001, a wonderful book by James Sears was published called Rebels, Ruby Fruit, and Rhinestones, with the subtitle Queering Space in the Stonewall South. Of course, it thoroughly covered the impact of Anita and her campaign, and I was pleased to do a radio interview with Dr. Sears that year. Here's him commenting on Anita.
Prior to Anita Bryant, all these individuals, we're talking about, you know, several hundred people in the South by 75, 76 who were, quote, activists. That was a minuscule amount of people compared to those people, for example, who would go party at the old plantation, for example, or go discoing in the Glitter Gulch in Raleigh, or go to the, be involved in one of the crews, gay crews in New Orleans and Mobile. Most of the, quote, queer community was outside of any of this activism. And what Anita Bryant and the referendum in Dade County did, it was to present an opportunity for those activists to, in fact, engage a larger group of people in organizing.
It mainstreamed the community.
It mainstreamed the community, and also if Stonewall was the match that started the modern gay liberation movement, then, in fact, Anita Bryant was really the wildfire that spread across the entire country, starting from the Southeast, that engaged and enraged thousands of persons. And in fact, after the defeat of the Dade County referendum in June of 1977, Anita Bryant was already scheduled for a variety of different Christian bookings where she would sing and etc. She first went to Norfolk. And when she went to Norfolk, there were hundreds of people outside the Scope Auditorium protesting. And inside, there were 100 people who were protesting. She immediately went from Norfolk to Houston, Texas, where there were hundreds and thousands of people who marched. And I talk about that march to the government offices and to protest her. And that was really the first time in all these different locations, wherever Anita Bryant went, she was met with a phalanx of different communities who were all protesting the policies that she was promulgating. And so Anita Bryant and the Dade County Ordinance was really, this probably the singular most important organizing tool that activists had, and also was the very first time that we began to talk in this country, and particularly in the South, about homosexuality.
And even after she left the city, it left a structure, at least to build on, for that gay community.
Absolutely. And in some communities, for example, in New Orleans, there were community organizations that were developed because of that march, and then that those community organizations continued. But if you can imagine, in small places like Tyler, Texas, for example, or Tupelo, Mississippi, you know, where homosexuality was never discussed, all of a sudden now, you know, you would be watching one of your three, and there were at that time generally only three TV stations, mm-hmm. and Walter Cronkite would come on and talk about homosexuals and Anita Bryant. You would turn on, if you did have a PBSN station, McNeil Larry Report, and there would be a debate between people like Anita Bryant and Bob Kunst. You would pick up your Montgomery newspaper, and the headlines would be, you know, something about Anita Bryant, or there would be letters to the editor, or there would even be polls. You know, what do Montgomery citizens think about homosexuals being allowed to teach, or homosexuals being fired if they were known to be gay? That was unheard of prior to that. And so Anita Bryant was really a critical moment for the community.
This is J.D. Doyle bringing to a close this segment of Queer Music Heritage for October. But there's a lot more music to come in Part 2, including the reaction to Anita from artists in other countries, and some comments from several artists about their songs, and even one song that's X-rated. But for this segment, I save for last a song that certainly echoes what James Sears and Ray Hill said in their comments. From 1979 is Charlie King and Thank You, Anita.
Thank you, Anita. You couldn't have been sweeter. You brought us together like never before. Thanks to your mission, your newfound profession, it's now your obsession, not mine anymore. I am the gay one, afraid of the straight one. I kept my head down, and I thought I'd get by, but you and your cousin pushed me from the closet. Now I lift up my head and I sing to the sky. Thank you, Anita, you good love and sweeter. You brought us together like never before. Thanks to your mission, your newfound profession, it's now your obsession, not mine anymore. I am the straight one, afraid of the gay ones. I thought that they'd be one if I offered my hand, but since your fiasco, I'm marching in Frisco, 200,000 strong, walking